Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. Have you ever wondered how the rainbow got in the sky, or how the peacock got its colorful feathers, or anything else, really? Cultures all over the world have story versions of how one thing or another came to be in the world. We call these stories pourquoi stories. Of course, pourquoi is French for why. And today we're bringing you a couple of these pourquoi or why stories. The first one comes from Mara Menzies. It's a story all her own, but she crafted it from a folktale she heard growing up in Kenya. It's called How Fear Came Into the World. Here's Mara, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
This is a story. It's a creation story. It's an old story, therefore, because, of course, it takes place before the world even existed. All the gods lived up in the sky, and they were a little bit bored because nothing had changed in such a long, long time. Not just hundreds or thousands of years, millions of years. And they thought, oh, it's just the same. Let's do something. Let's have some fun. Let's create something different. And so they decided to make our world. They took some rock and ice and formed it into a nice, beautiful circle, and whee, they threw it into the universe. And it found its little spot. And they thought, if we could cover it with some nice grass and we could maybe place some people there, that's going to be fun. We could observe these human beings and see what kind of things they get up to. Let's give them the emotions of the gods, but let us not give them any powers. They will feel joy. They will feel anger. They could be a little bit greedy, perhaps, sometimes. They will feel all kinds of things. However, they will have no powers. And so that is what they did. They created the humans and they placed the humans on the earth. And the humans, well, they got on with things. There really was not much else other than the grass. But they went to work in the mornings. They plowed a little bit. They ate a few little things that they found. And then they went to sleep in the evening. So life was probably not that interesting. And so they would have to find different ways to amuse themselves. But in this world, they would sometimes get sick, but they were never scared when they got sick. They just thought, oh, it's really not a very good thing, and hopefully this person will get better. And if they don't, well, then that is a shame. There was no fear in the world at all. People were not afraid of death. They thought, well, when it comes, then we shall just simply move on to another life. If people were annoyed at something, they were not afraid to speak their minds because they thought, well, I shall say what I think and then we will find a way to solve it. If people came from another part of this rich grassland, they were not afraid because they thought, yes, these people could come with different ideas and some blessings. And so life was lived like that. Until one day, the sun came so close to the earth, and oh, the people began to feel unbearably hot. Oh, it was so uncomfortable, sticky and sweaty and awful, and they cried out, please help us, please save us, we cannot take this anymore. And suddenly, a huge crack appeared in the sky, and it parted wide, and a tree, the baobab, the tree of life, floated down from the heavens and planted its roots into the earth. They had never seen such an object before, but they saw that these branches and leaves gave such cool shade, and so they flocked towards it, and oh, they rested. And so it was that life continued, until a few weeks later, the sun came so close to the earth with such a vengeance. It was much hotter than the previous time, and the people could hardly breathe. The air was so warm. They raced to the baobab tree, but even that did nothing to help them. Please help us. Please save us. We cannot take this anymore. And the gods listened. Crack, 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 crack. A a huge crack appeared in the sky, and suddenly a lake floated down. It placed itself on the ground, pah, the first lake, and the people had never experienced anything like this before. And so they placed their fingers in it, and oh, it was quite cool and refreshing, and soon they were diving in, they were splashing, refreshing themselves. It was wonderful. Except there was one man, and his name was Otieno. And he did not frolic in the lake, in the water with everybody else. He sat under the baobab, the tree of life, and he watched them. And he said, "Here we live in this world, and we just have grass around. In 2 days, we ask for a little bit of help, and suddenly we have this amazing tree, and we have this huge body of water. I wonder what else there is up in the heavens." Now, Otieno also knew that he was not allowed to try and get to heaven before it was time. There was a law that forbade that, and everybody knew that law. But he thought, "Oh, I'm so curious. I really, really want to know." And so he decided that he would try to make a ladder that would reach the heavens. And he fashioned himself a little axe and bam, 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 he cut off some of the branches of the tree of life. He bound them together with some vines and he started to create a ladder that led to the heavens. Now, some of the people came and said, "Otieno, you know we're not supposed to do that. We ask that you stop right now." And Otieno said, "Nah, but I'm so curious. Imagine all the different things that might be up there." And some people were also curious. Now, they did not want to anger the gods, and so they did not want to make the journey themselves. But they thought, "Yeah, Otieno, you could go and then come back and tell us what it's like." And so he continued to create this ladder. And then when it was ready, he started to climb higher and higher and higher. And some of those people called out, "Shuka, Shuka, come down," they called. And others, they said, "Panda, Panda, climb higher and higher." And he was having a most wonderful time. It can sometimes feel rather good to be ever so naughty. And there he was, climbing so high until suddenly, pop, his head popped up into heaven. And he looked around and, things that he had never seen before. He saw magnificent mountains. He touched this white stuff that was really cold. He had no idea what that was. He saw trees like the one that was on earth and others of all shapes and sizes. He saw birds for the first time. He saw the butterflies and insects. He saw strange looking creatures with four legs and fur. He had never seen these kinds of things before. He was taking in everything. He saw a waterfall. He saw a river. He saw a rainbow in the sky. And he thought, "I am so happy." But of course, his presence had been noticed by the gods, and they were not happy at all. They said, "Who is this man who thinks that he can disobey the laws that we have given to the humans? How dare he?" But they watched him as he made his way happily through the heavens, and then he saw them. They were gathered there in front of him, and they were not looking very happy at all. And he thought to himself, "Oh dear, I might have overstepped the mark. I'm sure they're now going to punish me, and I probably deserve it too." So he made his way forward, and the gods spoke to him and said, "Otieno, why are you here?" And Otieno said, "Oh, I was so filled with curiosity. You gave us such wonderful things in such a short space of time. Oh, please, let me just enjoy it for a little while longer." Now, the gods knew that he had to be punished. There was no way around it. But they could not agree on what punishment to give him. They could make him sick, but that wasn't going to do anything. They could kill him, but he was going to die at some point anyway, so that was a rather useless and pointless punishment. And then they thought, let's just test him. Let's just see how he's going to behave in future. And so they called Otieno and they said, "Otieno, anything that you can see here, if you like it, you are welcome to take it down to the earth with you when you go." "Really?
Really? Oh, thank you, thank you. He was so excited. He began to imagine the applause and the reception that he would receive if he brought some of these magnificent things to the earth. And the gods, they allowed him to take whatever he wanted. He handed down the waterfalls. He pushed down the forests. All the herds of cattle, he made them go down. He even took the chickens and they flapped and they landed very, very safely. He took everything that he could find down to the earth. And just as he was about to descend the ladder, they called him and said, Otieno, there is one more thing, but this one is just for you. It's a calabash, and you must wear it around your neck, but you are never allowed to look inside. Now, Otieno thought, I will never need to look inside because when I go back, the people will think of me as a god myself. Oh, they're going to love me. I will have no need to open this calabash. And so he accepted it and they placed it around his neck and they lowered him down that ladder. When he arrived, he didn't even have to reach the bottom of the ladder. He launched himself off into the arms of the throngs of people awaiting him. Otieno, ochololo, otieno, cholo. Otieno, ochololo, otieno, cholo. Oh, they applauded him. You have brought us so many things, they sang. They told him how wonderful he was. Oh, Otieno, look at all of these things that you have brought to us. Thank you. And Otieno, he floated on this adoration for a long, long time. But we humans can be quite funny about things. We get used to things quite quickly. And soon, people realize that, yeah, we can go swimming in the river anytime. People would go and dive into the waterfall, and it was wonderful fun. People became used to going for lovely long walks through the forest, for hiking over the mountains. The people became very used to this new way of life. And so soon, the adoration and the applause for Otieno began to decrease in frequency. He no longer had people racing towards him and telling him how wonderful he was. People did not bring the gifts in the way that they used to, and he began to miss it. He thought to himself, I really liked that. And slowly, his attention turned towards the calabash that was around his neck. Now, he knew that he had angered the gods before, and he didn't really want to anger them again. And he thought, Otieno, be reasonable, be rational. You have already broken the law. Don't do it again. But of course, his curiosity was far too great until he couldn't take it anymore. He took the calabash from round his neck. He placed it on the ground. He took his axe. He raised it up and bam! He hit the calabash, and as it burst open, great swarms of black ash floated around. They settled onto the ground and they began to form little droplets. And these droplets began to swarm all over the earth. And as he looked at them, he thought, that doesn't look very nice. And they slowly began to make their way towards him. And he thought, that feels a bit uncomfortable. Some of those little droplets made their way to his leg and he tried to flick them off. It didn't feel very nice. He thought, this is quite unpleasant. But they made their way higher and higher until they reached his ear and in they crept. And suddenly his eyes began to glaze over. And when he opened them, the world looked a little bit different. He didn't know what it was, but there was a strange feeling inside him. And then suddenly he looked up and he saw somebody descending the ladder. And he was overcome with this incredible feeling. He didn't know what to do with himself. All he wanted to do was to run away and hide. He had never, ever felt like doing anything like this before. It was a woman. And as she came down with her blue robes floating out in the air, he thought, what does she want? I know who she is. It is the goddess of compassion. What does she want with me? This is terrible. She'll do awful things. She'll punish me. She might kill me. What am I going to do? And he raced behind the baobab tree and he hid. And the goddess of compassion, she made her way all the way down the ladder.
And she gently approached Otieno and she said, "Otieno, you have done a terrible thing. You have unleashed fear into the world."
"Fear? What is fear?"
"It is a tiny death that lives inside you. It speaks to you every moment of your life. And you have a choice to listen to it or not. And if you choose to listen to it, it will slowly eat away at you. Otieno, now that you have unleashed fear, you cannot do anything to take it back."
"But there must be something like I can do to make things better."
And the goddess of compassion, she felt so sorry for Otieno. And she said, "The only thing that you can do is to go out into the world and just speak to people. Make them aware of it, because most of them will not even know that fear exists inside them. And when you do that, when they are aware of it, then things will improve." And then she slowly started to ascend back up the ladder to heaven. And when she reached the top, she pulled the ladder back up to make sure that nobody ever made that journey again. And Otieno, he listened to her words. He stood up and off he went into the world. And he did as she asked. Whenever he encountered anyone at all, he would make sure that they understood that that little voice inside them, fear, could always be ignored. Thank you.
That was Mara Menzies with her story, How Fear Came Into the World. And listening to Mara's story reminds me of an early time when I remember being afraid. And I'm not talking about the kind of fear that comes with listening to a good ghost story or riding a roller coaster. And I'm not really talking about the kind of fear you should ignore, the kind of fear that you have to push through in order to do something good and brave, or the insecurity that keeps you from following a big dream. I think I'm talking about another kind of fear. Anyway, in this memory, my little brother Joe had just learned to ride a bike. I was still pretty new at riding a bike myself, and both of us were super excited about the new freedom our wheels gave us. Anyway, one summer night, my whole family went on a walk, or at least Mom and Dad and the babies walked. Joe and I rode our bikes. And when the rest of the family ended their walk and headed back for home, Joe and I wanted to keep riding. We decided we wanted to ride all the way out to the gas station at the end of the long road out of town, about a mile away. It was farther than we'd ever ridden before, and, well, we were new bike riders and filled with the spirit of adventure. And Mom and Dad said it would be okay, and that they'd see us at home. Off we went. The sun was just dipping toward the horizon, and cars were turning on their headlights as they came toward us on the road. And then the sidewalk ended, and we found ourselves on the soft shoulder, pedaling and wobbling along. You know, we'd only ever seen this stretch of road from inside the car before. Cars whizzed ever closer, the wind of their passing ruffling our hair and their noise ringing in our ears, throwing us off balance. And it got even darker, too. And we began to be afraid for our lives, not because we were on the edge of an adventure worth taking, but because we were in danger. And we finally looked at each other and decided together to go home. That the brass ring of riding all the way to the gas station wasn't maybe all that much of a brass ring after all. That we'd save pushing through fear for something worth pushing through fear for. We're still around, my brother and I. We didn't die that night. We've ridden on our bikes to the gas station a bunch of times since then, though. And we've pushed through a lot of fear in our lives to do some brave things. But we both remember that time when fear did the job it sometimes does, to warn us of actual danger, to keep us from being knuckleheads. And heading home to safety in the face of a darkening night on a dangerous road filled with heedless cars took, we think, a kind of courage. We both feel that way, even all these years later. And strangely, that's one of the places Mara's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along?
If you're hungry for stories, come and feed from the fruit of the tree of the apple seed.
There's a lot more coming up, but I wanted to introduce you to another show from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The show is called In Good Faith, and it's a podcast in which host Stephen Cap Perry talks with a different person in every episode about their walk of faith, their faith tradition, their relationship with the divine. And whether you want to strengthen your own faith or just listen to thoughtful conversations about religion and about a walk of faith with a terrific listener, that's Stephen Cap Perry and In Good Faith. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to In Good Faith whenever you like, whenever you need it. It's another great podcast from BYU Radio.
It'll have us all climbing that family tree where we share together the apple seed.
It's such a pleasure to be with you today on the apple seed. How about another Pourquoi story? This one by Jasmine Cardenas. It's a folk tale that tells of how ancient people first came to Mexico. It's called El Ocelote, or How the Ocelot Got Its Spots.
A long time ago, the people that we now call Mexicans lived in other parts of North America. But their god, Huitzilopochtli, sent a message, a prophecy. Huitzilopochtli told the people that were living all over the land in California, in Texas, as far high as South Dakota even. He told them to search for the sign. And this would be the sign that would tell them that they had found their home. And the symbol that they needed was an águila, an eagle, standing on top of un nopal, a cactus, surrounded by agua, water, holding un serpiente, a serpent in its mouth. And so when they saw that clear image, they would know that there they should create their forever home. And so the Aztec nation, the Mexica, walked in search of that symbol. Now they did not walk for like a day or 2 weeks or even a year. They walked for generations. But when they arrived down south in southwest U.S., they got closer to the area. And there they met new friends. They met a little one. Meow, meow. A little cat, not as small as your house cat, but not as big as a jaguar. This was an ocelote, an ocelot. Ocelote is the Nahuatl word. That's how we named the ocelot, the ocelot. When they found the ocelot, el ocelote, they say that el ocelote was originally a very joyful animal that pranced about and loved to eat flowers and grasses, and that he loved to look at his reflection in the lake and the water because his beautiful coat was a beautiful bronze golden coat with no marks. And that he would enjoy staring at himself. Meow. And at night, it would look up into the stars in the sky, and it loved one in particular, Metzli. Metzli was the biggest star that he could see. Mother Metzli is what he would call her, Mother Moon. And he would chit-chat with Metzli about how beautiful her rays of light were. And with his sister, Citlalpul. He would speak with Mother Metzli and with Citlalpul, who you and I would know as Venus. Citlalpul was radiant in the sky along with Mother Metzli, and they would chat and laugh and share time. And he loved spending time with them. But one day, an intruder came with a long, fiery tail. Meow! Who are you trying to outshine, Mother Moon? You don't belong here. Meow! You had better get going. And Citlalpul said, hold on a second, Ocelote. That's just Citlalmina. She's just traveling on her way. She'll be on her way, don't you worry. But she's trying to outshine you. She's trying to be shinier than you and Mother Moon, Mother Metzli. Meow! She needs to go. I don't like her.
Well, Citlalmina did not like being spoken to that way. Citlalmina knew of her beauty. She was the shiniest, most radiant in all of the sky. And when she traveled by, eyes would stare, and she enjoyed it. Who is this little cat trying to yell at me? Well, night after night, Citlalmina would make her entrance, and Ocelote would get mad. Meow! And he would tell her to get out of the sky and go back to where she came from. And Citlalpul would say, "Brother Ocelote, calm yourself. She's just on her way. Don't anger her." And sure enough, one night, this flower-eating, sweet, kind, grass-eating animal was not expecting it. And "I'll teach you," said Citlalmina. Zoom, 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 zoom. And she sent down fiery light in hot pieces. And Ocelote wasn't prepared. And oh, meow, he got burned. And he ran inside of a cave to hide from the fiery sky that was coming down on him. And in the morning, when he came out licking himself, meow, he looked at his reflection in the mirror. The mirror of the water, and what he saw was not his beautiful shiny coat untouched. He saw dark spots all over his coat. Meow, that Citlalmina. I knew she was up to no good. And he got angry and meow, started to prance on smaller animals than himself and eat them up. And he hid in the day so no one would see his ugly coat. He hoped that those marks would go away. And he only came out at night, which meant it was hard for him to find little animals to eat. And Mother Metzli looked down on Ocelote and took pity. Poor Ocelote. He's gonna get hungry. And so Mother Moon sent down a gift. The ability to see at night so that he could hunt and feed his belly, and not worry about the stares of others that were looking at him. And Ocelote realized that those marks would never go away. And they say that that is why Ocelote is a nocturnal animal, and how he got his spots. And Ocelote realized that kindness was key, and that everyone has their own journey. And just as he now had a new coat of spots, Citlalmina would find her way, and she would find her own home, just as the Aztec nation had traveled south, listening to Huitzilopochtli's prophecy, and had arrived at a lake, Lake Texcoco, where there in the middle of the water, they saw una águila, an eagle, standing on top of un nopal, a cactus, with a serpent, un serpiente, in its mouth. And there, they created their forever home. Lake Texcoco has since dried up, but that is Mexico City. Thank you.
That was Jasmine Cardenas with El Ocelote, or How the Ocelot Got Its Spots. Did you ever have to face an unknown? Did you ever have a time when fear spoke to you and made you want to hide? Have you ever found ways to push past that fear, or times when you've listened to a fear when it was warning you of danger? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. Listener Will Oldham did, after listening to Kevin Kling's story called Grandpa's Stars, a story in which Kevin watches the stars with his grandpa on the 4th of July. Will sent us this memory.
It reminds me of how I have slept outside in a tent on my balcony for the past 5 years with my sister. And I like in the summer. So during the winter, we have a tarp on to keep the snow out. But during the summer, there's no tarp. So we get to look at the stars and just find all the different planets like Jupiter and Mars. It's just so happy. And I like to fall asleep listening to Appleseed and the stars. It's just such a wonderful time of my day.
That was Will Oldham and his memory inspired by Kevin Kling's story, Grandpa's Stars. And you can listen to that story, Grandpa's Stars, if you like, in Season 6, Episode 8 of The Appleseed. Thanks for sharing with us, Will, and thanks for listening. We also want to thank Mara Menzies and Jasmine Cardenas for their tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.